And I am not sure, I've not done enough study in this. It would be interesting to me to ask you, what is the seed that produces bitterness? But I'm going to say that one of those seeds is hurt. How many of us have experienced hurt in our lives? I believe all of us have. Now, I'm not talking about physical hurt where your body gets hurt. I'm talking about hurt in your heart. And when somebody hurts you, or when you experience hurt in your heart, what do you do with that? I would say this, hurt in your heart, and especially the hurt that produces anger in response, is a seed that if allowed to stay in your heart, if you harbor that seed, it will sprout and it will grow into a root of bitterness. So today I'm going to say that hurt is a seed, that if you harbor that, you allow that to grow, it will turn into a root of bitterness. And the hurt that you received, it could have been unintentional by another person, or it could have been intentional by another person. Or it could also have been just imagined. You see, some of our imaginations work and we imagine people meant a certain way, a certain thing, and we experience hurt. But any of those three that I mentioned, I think we need to do the same thing with it. We do not harbor it. Now, there are times that we are hurt, that we experience hurt, and it may hurt for days. But how you relate to that hurt will have a big impact on you, on your life, how you live your life. But especially the hurt that produces anger. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath. I would like to speak a little bit about some Old Testament examples. The first one I would like to share on is this Maid of Israel. Here, several months ago, I shared a message and I integrated the story of the Maid of Israel. She was just a young girl, but I would dare say she was a jewel. She was a good caretaker of her heart. You see, the king of Israel was very wicked, and they had fallen away from God. I'm convinced in my mind that there were still people in Israel who worshiped and served God. But when Israel fell away, sometimes good people get hurt along with the bad. That happens in our lives too. Well, there was a time when a band of Syrian warriors invaded in a part of Israel, and they captured this young girl, little girl, and took her with them. They took her away from everything she knew, away from her parents, to a strange land, to a strange people, to a heathen people. And she ended up being a slave girl to a military captain in the Syrian army by the name of Naaman. And I can only imagine, this story, by the way, is found in 2 Kings chapter 5, if you want to check up on me. But in my mind, this little girl had a big impact on probably more people than what we realize. Because of the words that this young girl said, her master, Naaman, had the most dreaded disease that you could imagine called leprosy. And I think you're familiar with the story. And this little girl said that if Naaman could only see or go to the prophet in Israel, he could be healed of his leprosy. How did she know that? And here, why did she want to try to help the very man that she was a slave to? That tells me that she did not harbor the hurt that she experienced. That tells me that she had a good foundational teaching in her background. That tells me that she had a good relationship with the Lord. And how is it that a young slave girl could say something and her words carried so much weight that people talked to the king about what this little girl said? To the extent that the king decided to act on the information he got from her. He sent Naaman along with a lot of presents to the king of Israel and to ask the king of Israel to heal this man. And the king of Israel did not know enough about God to realize that God would be able to do it. Being a wicked man, he probably spent very little time being God aware. The prophet Elisha, he knew all about it, and he sent word to have him come to him. And this is something that I find very interesting. Naaman thought that God's prophet would strike his hand over the place of his leprosy and he'd be healed, a big thing. But Elisha didn't even go to meet him. Elisha sent his servant Gehazi. Go tell him to go wash in the Jordan and dip 7 times and then he'll be healed. And it says that Naaman left in a rage. And then his servants, now this is what I find interesting. His servants told him that if this man of God would have told you to do a big thing, you would have done it. But this thing that he's asking of you is so little. We're over here. We went to all the effort to come. Why don't you just do what he said? And Naaman could only think that the rivers over in Syria were so much cleaner and nicer than this Jordan River. He'd rather dip there. But they entreated him, and he relented. And I can't help but think that these servants that Naaman had with him were impacted by this young girl and her godly character and how she kept her heart, how she returned good for evil. So Naaman listened. And Naaman went and dipped. I believe he dipped 6 times and his flesh was still leprous. And he went down the 7th time and came up and his leprosy was totally gone. Naaman was a changed man. He said going forward, he is never going to worship any god but the God of Israel. It impacted his life. Seriously impacted his life, all because of this young little servant girl and how she kept her heart. I can't help but think, with the change that Naaman made, that there's a good possibility that this slave girl, just maybe, she was reunited with her parents. I don't know that, the Bible doesn't say. But I would like to leave another example. This is a man that had all kinds of opportunity, and I'm talking about Gehazi. He was a servant of Elisha, a man of God, a man who really connected with God. And Elisha had Gehazi with him when there was a time when somebody produced a little bit of food for a big group of people, and the food replenished itself, and the people had all. It's very similar to God, Jesus feeding the 4,000 or the 5,000. Very similar experience happened with Elisha. Gehazi was there. And Gehazi was there when Elisha met with the Shunammite woman. The Shunammite woman was a lady that married an older man and was not able to have children. And because of how hospitable the Shunammite woman was with Elisha and his servant, she had talked her husband into putting a room on a house, I think, for Elisha to stay in. And because of that hospitality, Elisha felt the need to see what he could do for this woman. So he got Gehazi to ask this lady, what's something that, well, Gehazi just told Elisha that, you know, she doesn't have any children. So Elisha told Gehazi to tell this lady that in a year later, she's going to have a child. And so it so happened, a year later, she had a child. And this young boy grew up, a young lad. And one day he was with his dad out in the field, and he said, my head hurts. And it got worse and worse. And the child was sent home to his mom. And very quickly he succumbed and died. This Shunammite woman went after the prophet Elisha. Elisha asked his servant, who's coming? And he said, it's this Shunammite woman. And he said, go ask her if all is well. And she refused to talk to Gehazi, but came to Elisha. And Elisha told Gehazi to take his staff and go to this woman's house and lay it on the child. And so Gehazi did that. And when Elisha came to the house, the child had passed. It had died, this young boy. And so Elisha asked everybody to go out, and he was in there by himself. And he laid himself on the child, and the child's body became warm and came alive again. And Elisha told Gehazi, deliver him to his mom. Point I want to make, Gehazi had all kinds of opportunity, but he was not a good caretaker of his heart. And when Naaman came to Elisha to be healed, and he saw how that Naaman was healed of his leprosy. He was there, I believe, when Naaman said that there is no God but the God of Israel. But he also saw the presence that Naaman brought with him. And I believe that in his heart, he had a desire for wealth, personal gain. And so Elisha refused to take any of the presents that Naaman had. And he sent Naaman home. Naaman went. He was a changed man. And Gehazi thought, you know, what a waste. All that wealth, I'm going to have a little bit of it. And so he chased after him. And then he made up a story about some other people coming and needing things. And Naaman gave Gehazi quite a bit more than he asked for and even helped deliver the stuff back. But then Gehazi took it away from them and they left again. And then he went and hid it. And then he came back to Elisha. Elisha asked him, where were you? Oh, he said, I wasn't anywhere. I was just here. And you see, when you allow some little things into your heart, you end up doing other things that are bad, that are worse. And Elisha said, did my heart not go with you when you went after him and received things? And I can only imagine the awfulness that Gehazi experienced. He said, the leprosy that Naaman had is going to be on you. And on your seed forever. Look at how all his children would be recipients, have to experience punishment for something dad had done. And it says, Gehazi departed from Elisha, white as snow. He was a leper. I am the caretaker of my heart. You are the caretaker of your heart. What do you allow there? Eternity is a long time. Hebrews 12, verse 15, looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, thereby many be defiled. I would like to turn to Ephesians chapter 4. Verse 31. Let's remember the seed of bitterness is hurt. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. I don't know how much you've studied on this verse, but I find it very interesting that all the words here line up in the proper order of how they happen. When you harbor hurt in your heart and it turns to bitterness, then comes wrath. Wrath is an inward anger, if you will, feeling. And to describe it, I would like to just picture dumping a bunch of oil on rags, putting a match to it, lighting it up, it's burning, and then you squelch it all down and put a lid on it, put it in a closet, and it just sits there and smolders and smolders and smolders. That is a description of wrath. It smolders. And it's there just waiting. You experience that hurt in your heart and you harbor it and it turns to bitterness. And especially if it's the kind of hurt that makes you angry, you experience wrath, and it's just a feeling that you have and you harbor it there. And then something happens that triggers you, and it's just like opening that closet, opening that lid, and a blast of oxygen goes in, and that thing flames out. That's anger. Anger is outward. Next is clamor, and that's yelling. I really don't like to do this, but I would like to relate a story of probably my most embarrassing moment. Because you see, as a young boy, I had a severe anger problem. I grew up in a family of 11. I had a brother who was a year and 2 months older than myself. And we did a lot of fighting, I'm sorry to say. There were times that we had to fight just to prove who won the fight the day before. And pretty much tooth and nail. And this was a time in my life I was not born again. When I was a young boy, the youth in our church had a garden patch that my dad donated for the church youth to use, and they grew produce. And we had a big pool light in our yard, and the youth would come together and they would plant things, and they also would come together to hoe the garden. And later they would get whatever it produced and they would sell it, and the money would go to their youth fund. And that's what youth activities consisted of when I was young. And the youth had this practice of coming and working in the garden, and then they would walk down the road. The garden was actually right across from your playground where you play and go to school. That's where the youth truck patch was. And they planted garden right there. See, I grew up on that farm right down the road from the schoolhouse. 7 years old when we moved there. But anyhow, the policy was for them to have project. They called it project. They would come together and they'd do their garden work there. Then they'd walk up the road to our place and play volleyball afterward. Well, I was a young boy, about 12 years old, had older siblings that went to project there, went with the youth. They came and played at our place. And I was a young boy, busy with farm work. We worked hard. And this one particular time, I was kind of upset because it was calling for rain that night. The grain bins that are down there, lids were open because we had put grain in. And they were calling for rain. Somebody needed to shut the lids. And we had other work to do, and I kind of communicated with my brother about all the work that needed to be done, and I would do this, and I don't remember what all was on my list to do, but on his list was to close the grain bin lids. And I quickly hurried around, and it was getting dark, and it got dark before I was done with all of my chores. But I had my chores done and was now thinking it's time to go to the house, when Elwood, my brother, found other things to do, and I don't know what all they were, but he had never closed the grain bin lids, and he told me to do it. And I was this young boy that I had this wrath smoldering in me, and when he told me that I had to close the grain bin lids, that anger spilled out, and I clamored, and I yelled at him real loud. And he gave a loud whisper back. And here I looked behind me, and probably about 75 feet behind me was our whole youth group walking up the road to play volleyball. Needless to say, I quickly went and I closed those grain bin lids, and instead of being out and watching them play, I went to the house. But that's clamor. It's when you yell. Next comes evil speaking. That follows it. And sometimes people can be involved in evil speaking without experiencing hurt. Evil speaking is when you say things you don't mean to say. There are times when a husband might be upset at his wife. Wife might be upset at her husband. And if they have this bitterness within themselves, they might even say, "Man, I wish I'd never met you." And in the heat of the moment, when that anger spills out, you say things that you really don't mean. Or you say things that you wish later you'd never said them, because those words can hurt. And those kind of words, that kind of hurt can go very deep. And it is only with God's help that we can find healing for this. The Bible says in Colossians 3:19, "Husbands, be not bitter against your wives." When you harbor hurt, it turns to bitterness and becomes a root. And the Bible says that many people can be defiled thereby. And then after evil speaking is malice. Malice is when you want to go hurt somebody. Or, if you don't really have that as an option, you may get into your vehicle and drive very fast. Maybe even spin your wheels, turn donuts. That's what malice, if you harbor those kind of things, that's what it can make you do. When you give into your feelings in that way. Remember, you are the caretaker of your heart. What you allow to stay there will germinate and it will grow, whether it's good or whether it's bad. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 15 says, "Let us not fail of the grace of God." We need to forgive. We need to forgive and we need to love. And it's interesting how that Jesus, shortly before his crucifixion, I want to think that it was the day before. In John chapter 15, he told his disciples to love one another. You would think they would have known that already, walking with him. But he told them that they should love each other, love one another as I have loved you. And I find it interesting that he did that just shortly before he showed the whole world how much he loved us all. Gave his life. When you experience God's grace on your life, extend that to your fellow man. Forgive and love. Another little story that I would share. We were in Canada a week ago, and last Sunday had the opportunity to be in church, and a man there by the name of Stephen Gingrich, he was an elder in the church where he's a part of and functions a lot in the same capacity that we elders do here. And he shared a devotional Sunday morning. He shared this story. Did not realize it quite at the time, but I remember Pauline's dad relating stories of when he used to live in Ohio. And he used to talk about the Gingrich boys would come flying down the hill on a unicycle. They were good at riding a unicycle, a single wheel. And they would just go flying down the hill past their place or wherever it was he saw it. And this Stephen Gingrich is a son to that young boy. We got to visit with him after the service, but he related this story of when he was a 10-year-old boy. They so looked forward to getting together at Grandpa and Grandma's place. And especially they had this annual event that they'd all get together and they get to meet all their, with all their cousins and play with them. And they got there, I think one of the first ones, and the table where they would eat was like put in a corner. They had a bench along two walls, chairs on the other. And the way he related the story, he said, it's amazing how many cousins can sit on one bench, way more than what you can fit on chairs. And they were so looking forward to that. And he said his grandma was noted for having a very good sauerkraut that she made whenever they had this function. And that big roaster was plugged in, sitting on the table. When all of a sudden they got word that another group of their cousins had arrived, and he not wanting to be the last one to get out there to meet them, he was sitting at the table there working on something. I'm not sure what he was doing, but he scooted out and took off, and he forgot all about the cord. And he said he pulled that big roaster of sauerkraut off, and it ended upside down all over the floor. And, oh, what was he to do? He said he went down and quickly whispered into Grandma's ear, and Grandma quickly came. She gave him a spatula and told him, we need to clean this all up. And he said when his cousins came in, they had everything in the roaster and everything was back just like it was before. You couldn't even tell it had happened. He said that was one time that Grandma told him, what people don't know won't hurt them. But he said the thing that really impressed him, Grandma said that. And when he attended his grandma's funeral, he related that story. And he said there was nobody that knew about that. Grandma had never whispered a word to anybody. That's love. We do good to examine ourselves and remember, you are the gatekeeper. You are the caretaker. Read the Word of God. Another little story that Billy Graham, America's evangelist, he used to relate a story. He said this druggist had somebody come into his store. It was a little boy, a young boy. Come in and asked him if he could use his telephone. They said, well, yeah, you can use it. And this little boy went and called a local grocery store. And he asked the grocery store owner if he could use a boy that would stock his grocery store shelves. He'd be willing to sweep the floors and maybe even show up early and open the store for him. And the grocer told the boy, he said, no, he said, I've got a boy filling that spot right now. Don't have any need for a boy. And he said, well, is that boy doing a good job? I mean, maybe I could do it better. And he said, no, sonny. He said, I'm very happy with the job that this boy's doing. And so he said, okay, well, thank you and goodbye. And the druggist couldn't help but overhear the young boy, his conversation on the phone. So he said, I'm sorry, sonny, you must be looking for a job. And he said, no, it's okay. You see, I'm the boy that's working for the grocer. I'm just checking up on myself. I wrote some things down. When we harbor hurt and it develops, grows into bitterness, it hinders healthy relationships. It stunts church growth. It develops unhealthy relationships with others who also allow themselves to be poisoned or damaged. It causes cliques to form in youth groups or church groups. It shuts off healthy fellowship with good people who could help you heal from your hurt. Often a bitter person does not develop deep, healthy relationships. Their relationships are surface deep because they are afraid to open the door to their hurt. They keep it closed and locked for fear it will expose them to more hurt. So they just go on living with bitterness. Ephesians 4:26, right across the page here, it says, let not the sun go down upon your wrath. Do not harbor hurt. Hebrews 12:15. I'd like to turn back to that. It says here, looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God. How can we fail of the grace of God? I believe that what makes us fail of the grace of God is when we experience God's forgiveness in our hearts and in our lives, and we fail to pass that on to our fellow man. We fail to love and forgive our fellow man. Because when we don't do that, then God's grace on us will also be stopped up. And that is how we fail, is when we experience it, but we don't pass it on. When people hurt us intentionally, we are called to return good for evil. Ephesians 4:32 goes on and says, and be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. May the Lord bless you. Let's kneel for a word of prayer.